Welcome to Product-Led Growth Leaders, where we learn about the bold path of building digital products that sell themselves. Let's listen to product leaders who can give us a glimpse into the innovative thinking process. Showcasing and celebrating these awesome folks, I'm your host, UX and product design veteran, Thomas Watkins. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show, Product-Led Growth Leaders. Today, we have a very special guest, Vijay Raghurajan, and he is a product leader at Applied Systems, and he's going to tell us today a lot about starting a product from inception. This is a kind of a position from a UX side I've been in before and having to think through the ideation and stuff, but from the product management side, keeping your eye on the prize from a market perspective and making sure that your product is successful. Vijay, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Thomas. I'm very excited to be part of this conversation as part of your podcast. Thanks for having me here.
Awesome. Likewise. Let's start off by talking a little bit about you as a professional. I know you had an engineering background. Tell us a little bit about how that led from, you know, kind of where you are to leading a product.
Yeah, it's been a long journey. So for a period of 16 years, I initially started in programming for a brief period of time, and then was fortunate to get into a business analyst role for insurance companies as part of a consulting company. I come from Tata Consultancy Services. We are a leading consultancy services provider, or IT services provider. We have offices all around the world. We have major clients in any domain that you name it. So I was primarily playing in the financial services domain, insurance domain to be specific. I spent my career 10 years there. That's where I learned about customer empathy because we stress a lot about customer centricity, like focusing on customer needs and helping them meet their needs, solving their problems. And 2016, I wanted to switch into product, right? Work for a product-oriented company. That's when Easylinks found me. They are one of the leading insurtech for independent agents in property casualty insurance space, B2B products per se. So from BA skill set, I transitioned slowly into product owner and product manager. There are a lot of differences between BA and product manager, right? So that was a lot of fun transitioning into product management role. And I've been fortunate enough to play in both 0-1 space and 1-N. Product space, right? In B2B segment.
Now, could you define that for the audience, the difference between the last two things that you mentioned?
Yeah. 0-1, think of it like a greenfield development, right? So you have an untapped need, you have an untapped demand, and you are essentially exploring that and coming up with the product to solve the problem, right? So that the product doesn't exist. You are discovering the needs in the market and you are saying, hey, based on my company strengths, the needs align with the company goals. So it makes sense for us to solve the problem. So that's 0-1. You are creating a brand new product to solve that need. 1-N is mostly scaling a product, right? So if you think of a product lifecycle, the product already gone through the inception phase and we need to take them through the growth and the maturity phases. So that's 1-N. So it's scalability. So a lot of things we need to think through in scaling a product. So that's 1-N.
That's great. And so Vijay, with your background in your previous kind of work, you came from the BA, you got exposed to a customer-centric kind of worldview, right? And then that kind of, I imagine, helped orient your thinking around it's important for us to be centered around the customer. And so when you got an opportunity to lead a product and you're starting from ideation, how did you start? How did you know where to begin? Because, you know, there's a lot of people get kind of fearful in that kind of situation. There's nothing to start with. And if you're not the kind of person who likes the green field and likes just working kind of from nothing, how do you create the initial something from which everything grows?
Yeah, that's a great question, right? So first, start with identifying and understanding the problem space. more. That's what we did. I can tell you from our experience, right? So first, recognizing that there is a clear need and understand the problem further, right? So we came up with the 0-to-1 example was a network management system for a big group of agencies in the insurance space, and we found that there was nothing, there's no product like that existed to solve their unique needs. Well, these are called market access providers. So they manage a group of member agencies, right? So we had a relationship with them based on a different, totally different product. So we got introduced into that market, right? But on a different product and solution space. So now you have a customer segment, you understand their needs, and you are essentially tapped into a need that deserves to be solved. So let's do a lot of user research, understanding the problem further. Can I talk to them more? Right. At this point of time, you're not even thinking about developing a product. The goal is to identify the problem and make sure, is it worth solving a problem? Not all problems are worth solving, right? Is it worth solving a problem for my company? Is it aligning with my vision and my company's vision, my company's goals? So that's what we did there, having a lot of usability calls, doing customer visits to understand the problem further. Then, once you clearly identify, okay, this is a problem worth solving, you do a business case just to get the stakeholders buy-in, right? And in the business case, I'm defining a clear minimum successful product. So I use MSP instead of MVP because minimum viable product sometimes means what's viable for us, not really thinking from customers. So what is a minimum successful product version that will solve those problems, like a vertical slice? So how quickly we can get into that, deploy that version. Once you make sure that these problems are worth solving through a business case and you deploy that minimum successful product, right?
That's
And then you learn.
really, no, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, and then you learn from that. Yes. Yeah, please ask a question.
So because I want to drill into that, the problem worth solving, because that's key. But before we go into that, I want to get into who are your users and what kind of relationship? It sounds like you have a close relationship with the actual users and you're keeping them in the loop, it's sounding like. So who are the users and what does that process look like for you?
Yeah, they are our users in this case as our agency principals, agency owners. We talked about that big group of market access providers, right? So these are users working in those agencies, right, who have those needs. So we were able to go to them, talk to them directly, understand their pain point. How are they doing today, right? So that's a great question. So one of the things we have to make sure is the needs are being met by some solution today. So you are essentially competing against it. It could be a completely manual, right? They may be doing through spreadsheets. They may be doing through a bunch of spreadsheets, or they may be spending time browsing online multiple times. So your competitor is in some version or other, even in 0-to-1. That's important. So that's something we sometimes miss. Oh, it's zero. There is nothing that exists. So I can come up with whatever I want. But no, you are competing against an existing alternative.
Excellent. And so you talked about earlier the problem worth solving.
Yep.
And kind of early in my career, I used to hear about I call it the field of dreams concept. If you build it, they will come. And just because you build something doesn't mean people will come. So it requires being in touch with the marketplace, and you're picking a problem worth solving, not just solving, just randomly solving a problem that you want to solve. It's something that people actually want. From a market perspective, you talked about being in touch with the users. Is there a way that you can test methodically the marketplace and kind of tap it for the need? Maybe observing other products or keeping an eye on what the product is doing. How do you kind of sort of put your feelers out there and kind of be absorbing just information? Is that a methodological process that's baked in, and how do you approach that?
Yeah, one thing is observe what current market competitors are doing in that space, right? Like we talked about finding a problem worth solving. Do current competitors even solve the problem, right? That is one thing. And another thing is testing with the users. So you don't have to try to test as much as possible before without doing major investment, right? You don't want to spend two or three quarters worth of effort and then go and test it with them, right? It's too expensive. So one of the things we do is creating a prototype that is not real, but it feels like real. So see how the users are interacting with it and what kind of feedback we are getting in testing through prototypes in the marketplace, right? So once I identify these are the users who are having this problem, we add periodic user calls, sending them a prototype version ahead of time to see how they are interacting with and what kind of feedback that they are giving. And we also did surveys. We do periodical surveys to get that feedback, right? So try to learn as
Right.
much as possible before spending time on actual development.
So you don't waste, end up wasting a lot of work.
Yeah, I end up wasting a lot of work, and you know it's an opportunity cost, right? So you could spend
Right.
that effort on some other problem instead of this particular problem. So I'm a big fan of learning without as much as possible without development, right? Or there are some things only behaviors will tell you, right? That's why the MSP, the minimum viable product, is so popular in the product management place, because the customers always say something, but they react in a different way when they encounter a situation. So you can test it through that minimum viable product or a close enough prototype if we can, right?
That's really good. And so one of the things that I've found, you know, in my career is that it's easier to create things, especially new things from scratch, if there's kind of the support and there's a culture of innovation and the developers have a mindset and the designers and whoever is involved have a mindset. And then stakeholders also have a mindset that it's okay to move fast and break things. What are some of the things that a team can do, in your observation, to promote a culture going in the right direction?
Very good question. There are two things I would say. At a company level, we have a specific percentage. Think of it like your personal stock portfolio investment, right? And you invest in growth stocks, moderate stocks, right? So we have to think of product portfolio as that kind of investment strategy. And you need to have a specific percentage on innovation, right? So depending on the organization, the appetite can be more. Like it could be 50% of your portfolio for innovation, 20%, but there has to be a certain percentage. And in a company which is risk averse and they are not ready to take that risk, you can get stakeholder buy-in. Hey, we are doing a lot of investment on, you know, scaling the product, in meeting up with customer demands. We would like to spend 15% to innovate. Otherwise, you miss out on competition, right? Your competitors will take advantage. That is one thing at a higher macro level. On a micro level, one of the things we do is, you know, we do hackathons, right? Hackathon is a good place to try out innovative ideas, right? And you get executive buy-in through that hackathon, justifying the value. And those hackathons can become real projects for a team, right? So that's one of the ways to try out innovation. It's through hackathons because it's low risk. You are essentially not putting out to market. You are just getting everyone excited. Hey, how cool. And you end the hackathon saying, hey, how cool it would be if you can make this real. And the executive goes, yeah, go for it. Right? Then it becomes a project. Right? So these are the different ways you could do. Think of it like a portfolio, like an investment strategy. And you need to have innovation in it. That's a given. But how much percentage, I leave it to the organization, depending on their appetite.
Yeah, and that's a really important mentality to have, isn't it? A lot of people don't know that the well, a lot of people do know, but I think the general public doesn't know that a lot of the big companies, Google is kind of famous for it, is they do those kind of disruptor teams. I don't know, they call it something like that, where,
Yes, Google, I
right?
don't remember the exact name, but yes, they have some exactly similar to that kind of hackathon, the like a portfolio investment, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
So
Because a smaller team might be more allowed to do kind of crazy innovations and go off in a different direction.
correct, correct. Yes. And we have to sell the executive team on the value. Hey, think of what we can do with this kind of approach. Otherwise, your competitors are going to do this and they're going to take a lead, right? Yeah.
Here's a question that I think probably a lot of product managers maybe struggle with a little bit is the balancing of the tactical side of things with the visionary side of their job. And a lot of LinkedIn pages I see with product managers, I think it's on yours, like big skill set, you do a lot. So you do the visionary side, you do the evangelizing, but you also have to kind of get your hands in the weeds. What is the key to managing that for you? Do you find that one takes away from the other, or does it play into each other? How does that shape out for you?
Yeah, that's a good, interesting question. A product manager wears multiple hats, right? And we are essentially responsible for the entire product function as a whole. And I have seen this varying between the organizations, Thomas, right? Some organizations would like their PMs just to focus on the vision and the strategy, and they have a product owner or a BA to assist with, right? In other organizations, the product manager is essentially doing everything, right? Coming up with the business case, the scope document, all the details, and everything. They are essentially, so it depends on the organization there. But I would say the product manager to understand the expectations of their role in that particular organization and then play accordingly, right? You are essentially not going to do coding. So that's not something I've seen across organizations. You may have to get into a level of understanding the system details so you can get the engineer's mind share and talk in the, use their own terminology and stuff like that. That's about it. But the primary responsibilities, I would expect the PMs to play are around the vision and the strategy, because that's a core. If you don't do that, the product is, it can make or break the product. So understand the core responsibilities and play all around that. And the rest of the things, you should leverage others. You are essentially shepherding the resources, but you don't actually do the work. That's how we should see it. And the product manager should even be bold enough to raise that with their respective managers and say, hey, my time is better spent on vision, strategy, and the stories. I think I'm being pulled into the details there, engineering details here, but I just want to bring this to your notice. So we have to tell them, otherwise they won't know. So so leverage engineers for their strength, based on their strengths, on the engineering details. Let the product person play the true product role, is what I would think is best.
Yeah, that's really good. And have you had, because when you're thinking about the being a visionary, you have to make strategic decisions, right? And the strategic decisions sometimes have to be kind of bolder. Do you have on hand any kind of story or reflection about the strategic decision that you've had at this, with the product that you're working on now, that's, changed things from going into, from one possible future to another possible future? Does anything come to mind?
Yeah, I can pick an example during COVID. We had a self-service product, like I talked about insurance, right? So think of the self-service product, like product that's used by insureds, end insurer, like you have an auto insurance policy, I assume, right? I have a homeowner's policy, auto policy. So think of people like us accessing that portal, getting the necessary documents, making a change request and all of that. So this is the product context. So before COVID came into play, the plan was to completely come up with we had an existing product which was a bit outdated at the time. We wanted to come up with a completely brand new self-service portal. We were calling it as 2.0 or whatever, right? And I kind of recognized the concerns among the executive time and the COVID suddenly hit, because the business case was approved before COVID. So I had to quickly come up with a pivot. Hey, let's not do this new thing because it's so much investment. We don't know what's going to happen. Sometimes, you can predict only so much. During COVID, just think about those 3-4 months, like March 2020 to June 2020. We couldn't predict what's going to happen. So I proposed a strategy. Hey, let's not do this new thing. Let's take the existing product and give the new look and feel. So the customers think it's new, but the product is still the same. We just improve the user experience. And we did a quick win in just 2-3 sprints. And we still kind of essentially achieve the same outcome, announce it as 2.0, but it's not actually a new build or a new technological architecture or anything. It's just like giving that quick wins. So I identified what are the quick wins that are more relevant at this point in time during COVID. Maybe quicker access, quick links, immediately accessing them, and non-product ideas, right? So how can we give ways for our agencies to promote this product even more than before, like coming up with a quick email campaign? That's one of the things. You don't have to technically need to solve all problems through real piece of code, right? Leverage your marketing, your email campaigns tools, the non-core product items to drive the product adoption. So that's what we did, like a quick strategy pivot, if that makes sense. Yeah.
That's really good. And I've run into that a lot too. Sometimes you just have to buy yourself time.
Yes.
And there's just things like you could have those smaller wins that are maybe a little bit more surface, but if it feels like a deeper win to your users, you could buy back maybe 3, 6 months or so and then develop something like more substantive.
Exactly. Yeah, buy yourself time because, and then what you are essentially also doing is not making major strategic bets when you are not really sure which way the market is
Right.
going to do, making incremental improvements, which is not too expensive, right?
Yeah, that's excellent. And so is your product mature enough where you're being able to benefit from kind of data-driven product metrics, or is that something that you have kind of on your roadmap to integrate the ability to kind of automatically gain data about usage of your product?
Yeah, no, we have made some good progress over the last couple of years. So we have data monitoring tools and usage tools that tracks which features the users are using the most, where are they running into issues, and we get them into our internal monitoring tool in our company, and we look at it on a periodic basis, on a monthly basis, on a quarterly basis, and use that, code that as proof points for upcoming initiatives. Okay, this is why we need to invest in this area because users are having problems and so on. So, right? They are using this payments feature a lot, so it makes sense to invest in upgrading this feature. So, depending on your company's maturity level, you can use a lot of these tools like Datadog or FullStory, different tools to gather these metrics and use that to inform your upcoming product decisions. Yeah.
Nice, nice. Vijay, a lot of great insights today. Can you tell people where they can find stuff about your work? Should they go just straight to your LinkedIn? And is there anything else you would like people to check out?
LinkedIn is the best place to contact me. So you can look for Vijay Rangarajan in I'm at Applied Systems. So yeah, feel free to reach out to me. I always like talking about product. So LinkedIn
And
is the best.
you're located in Dallas as well. So we'll
Yes,
have the
definitely.
name on the episode and people can look
Yes.
for you in Dallas at Applied Systems.
Yep.
Vijay, wonderful conversation and thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Thomas.
Thank you for tuning in. Join us next time on Product-Led Growth Leaders. Take care.